It's like that old movie Office Space. Eventually, I'm going to take a bat to that printer. For those of you who know that reference from that movie, that copy machine, they bang up a copy machine at some point. Eventually, that's going to be me, because I'm going to be like, this is soul sucking to me. But if I can see small little targets that I can run, sprint, hit it, celebrate that hit. Run, sprint, hit it, boom. I nailed that target too. But then those targets are behind me and I'm going on to the next target. For me, that's just a little bit more of a growth focus, and allows me to really dive in 2 feet, 100% into something fully, rather than just kind of like 50 to 60% in my weeks doing the same tasks over and over.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. I am glad to have back Dallas Amsden returning to the podcast. Dallas is a friend of mine. He was willing to talk to me at the very start of this podcast when not even my mom was listening to the show. I don't think my mom still listens, but she doesn't really listen to all that many podcasts anyway. Dallas is a coach. He is helping business leaders become better communicators. He is working to start his own podcast for business communications. And also, he has a new course to help podcast guests be the kind of guests that podcasters love to have on their show. We had a fun conversation. Here's Dallas Amsden.
Well, hey, Dallas, thanks for being here. I appreciate you coming on the show again.
Yeah, man, it's good to be back. It's been a while. I was an early guest for you.
You were one of the people who were courageous enough to come on. I think if I would look back, and it was like you were episode number two. I can't remember who
was
I talked
that?
To.
It was two. I thought you were a few
it
more.
Was
in.
Number, it was number two. Yeah, and so this is
dang.
This
and if only I had known, I would have angled to be number one, Eric.
Well, and I can't remember who was number one, but yeah, this was, and I remember it was a good conversation. I mean, you and I have known each other for quite a while.
And, yeah.
So anyway, just for people who might be listening to this, I am in Reno, Nevada right now. This is the first time I've ever tried to do like the podcast from someplace other than my podcasting studio that's in my basement. And so, I look at the acoustics and I can hear this kind of rumble in the background, but I did a test yesterday and it's pretty good. So unless people walk by and try to talk to me, I think we should be okay.
No, I think you're going to be just fine. It sounds good from my side and it looks good. I like this background.
Well, yeah.
Those of you who can't see this, Eric's got he's wherever they are, he's found like the lower level, the basement or something. And It's got a nice little background. There's some nice photos on the wall and stuff.
Yeah, this is fun. So, well, anyway, Dallas, I know last time I think we talked, this is primarily appeals to runners, and one of the things that you and I had discussed, and because you and I talk frequently, and you said that you don't like running, and so that was kind of the lead in. So tell a little bit about your your dislike of running.
Well, I should mention, so growing up, I'll go back a little bit, way back when I was young.
Way back. Good. Yeah. That's usually we try to start there. It's like, your past experiences with running and what led you.
I never did long distance running. I think that was the thing was, I played soccer and I played basketball just as my usual sports in mm-hmm. high school. And those are, soccer is not a huge field. And a basketball court, obviously not at all either. So it was a lot of wind sprint sort of stuff. And then, even when I decided to run track for a couple of years, my longest race was the 800. Okay. So I had sprinter style legs. I had that sprinter style body type. And so I never did a bunch of long distance running, tried to get into it multiple times. A couple of years ago, even had signed up for a 10K trail race. The day that the race happened, it was like February 23rd or something. And for those, I'm in the St. Louis area, so I'm in the Midwest, and it had been decently warm that week. Well, for some reason, the day of the race, as is always the case, right, Eric, whenever mm-hmm. you do a winter trail race, you're going to deal with elements. And so it was 27 degrees and started sleeting when the race began. Mm-hmm. And I was ill-equipped. I didn't have the right gear on. I did not properly train for a trail race either. I had been running distances on flat trails, but not like terrain. It was concrete. There's this huge trail here in the Metro East area of St. Louis, which is the Illinois side of the river. Huge trail that goes through about 8 cities, and it's just a biking and a running trail. And but it's a concrete, 2-lane path. And that's mm-hmm. what I trained on. So I was like a flat ground, mild elevation. So that 10K really banged the heck out of me. I was like, this is miserable. I came in with like 30 seconds before the time cap, and I was the second to last person. The other person was a very, very, very much older than me gentleman who, I should have beaten in any other kind of race. But I realized I just have more of a sprinter's mentality about a lot of parts of my life. I mean, I've always done wind sprints in business. It's like, oh, small project, finish, accomplish, move on. Small project, finish, accomplish, move on. Take a break in between sort of thing. So I realized my whole mentality is not one of ultra marathoning. Now, life is a marathon, right? Mm-hmm. But I choose to run it in short wind sprints and then take the necessary rest. So I just have I think it's not that I dislike running. It's that my mindset is one of a different style.
Right. And distance runners, is the mindset for running distance is much different than a sprint. I mean, you really right. have to, yeah.
Well, yeah. And I do CrossFit. And and the joke with CrossFit is how do you know whether you're talking to a vegan or a CrossFitter? They make sure to mention it in the first 5 minutes of meeting them. In CrossFit though, we do like 400 meters or 800 meter runs. Mm-hmm. A mile is a long, quote, long run in CrossFit, because then we do 400 meters, and then we usually go back and do like pull-ups or burpees or something with a barbell or box jumps, then have to run 400 again, do something else, 400 again. So like even that, they're short distance runs because they're part of a, quote, longer workout.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've got a timer that is as part of the recording, and you're a little over the 5 minute mark before mentioning CrossFit.
Thank God, everybody. I must not be a true CrossFit fan then.
Maybe you need to work out a little bit more.
Well, that's not to be denied, but
no. So what motivated you? I mean, you said you signed up for this 10K trail race. What was the motivation to like, I think I need to go do this.
That particular reason I did that one was I try and set quarterly goals for myself. And usually there's a physical goal. There's a spiritual goal. There's targets. I don't even like the word goal. I like to use the word target because I know if I hit it or not. So the targets for the physical part of who I am, I want to make sure that target is something that's a little bit challenging for me. It's going to cause me to grow outside of my normal routine. So sometimes it's a competition, sometimes it's a race, sometimes it is a CrossFit competition. But it's something that it's like, no, I have to enter that. I have to put my name on the line. I have to do that sort of thing. And so for that particular quarter, and it kind of was an overlap from November into February, because I had to time the race of when the race was. For that particular quarter, it was like, I'm going to do something I haven't done, which is a trail race. That's a little bit, it's going to take me out of my comfort zone. And the other thing too, is I understand there was a point where I was training for that race, and every day, and this is where I think the magic of running is, that I've seen glimpses of the magic, but I'm definitely no magician. So I see glimpses of the magic, but I'm not a magician. And every now and again, I get those. When I go out and go for the longer run, there's something about training my mind to go more than a 5K, to go 5 or 6 miles. There's something that happens around about the 3 mile mark, where something else just clicks in, and I finally get into the groove and the zone, and my brain starts just allowing some processing. And I actually found that to be beautiful. And when there's this one point where I was on one of the longer runs, I was on like an 8 mile run one day in the training. And, it was like, I was all alone out there, but I could hear the wind. The trail is covered by trees, and I could hear the wind in them. And it was like, it almost sounded like, as I'm running and my imagination is going, it almost sounded like this distant crowd. Yes, yes. Like that sort of thing. Where it was like, I could hear the way that just the leaves were blowing. The leaves were still really thick in the fall. They hadn't all fallen off for the winter. And it was like, I could hear that. And I called it the wind in the trees, not just the wind in the trees, but the wind in the trees. And that was one of those moments where I got a glimpse. Have never experienced the runner's high. I've never hit that in my life. I hear about it, myth, legend, and lore.
Mm-hmm.
But that particular moment, I was like, oh, nature is cheering me on right now. It's kind of a fun feeling.
That's cool. Well, and there are a lot of runners who don't experience runner's high. I've never experienced I feel good after a run, but I've never experienced that.
Yeah.
What people describe as a runner's high. So there are people,
why do you do it then? I kept trying to do it thinking at some point I'm going to get this high that everybody talks about.
There are other benefits. It's for me, I mean, it could be my emotional makeup. But it's just, I am much more of a level. I don't get really high highs, and, I do get down, but I don't go real deep. I try to, my emotional response is my bandwidth for emotion is a lot more limited than the regular people. And my wife tells me that, my wife is the one who says, you need to feel things more. And so that's part of the mindset work that I'm doing for myself.
Sure. Sure.
But no, there are endorphins, and there are, if I don't run, I feel it in my body. That I'm not getting that, if I don't get out and move.
So I definitely feel that. I feel that it's like a buildup, and you get all these toxins built up, but I usually get mine out with a barbell.
Right. Yeah. And any kind of physical activity will give you that. The runner's high and it's almost like a drugs. There are a lot of people who don't experience that. So you could run a long ways and still be frustrated in your search for the runner's high. So you said you challenged yourself.
Yeah.
What were the things that you took away from that, experience of your race?
So one of the big takeaways for me, like I said, when I got out there and I was like, oh, we're actually running a trail. Like this is not running through the woods. Like I have been on a bike trail. This is I'm going to be using tree roots for steps at a couple of points. So number one, I was not properly prepared. I had not done the research ahead of time of, hey, the shoes you're going to use need to be better. You're going to want this and this for warmth. And I know you and I've talked about the cold versus warm feeling. With the sleet, I was like, oh, I wasn't prepared for this part. I was not prepared to actually battle the elements. So one of the big takeaways that I learned that I applied to one of my next physical challenges was do more research ahead of time. Know fully what you're getting into. And I think that's a huge lesson for life. I mean, there are sometimes I think we're sorely unprepared for what we are about to hit. Now, you know, I've heard this metaphor before. A sea captain who knows their ship, they can sail on any sea because they understand the principles and they understand what's going on. But if you don't understand the principles of what you're getting into and try and wrap your mind a little bit around it strategically, oh, this is going to happen. I need to be prepared for all things. There's a lesson in Stoicism that talks, it's this idea, amor fati, the Latin term, love fate. And it's the idea of a Stoic will look at all the potential outcomes and play them out in their imagination. And in doing so, they'll be prepared should any of those outcomes arise. Mm-hmm. And so one of the big lessons that I took away from this particular event was I did not plan for potential outcomes. I just was like, let's go do it. It's going to be fun, he said. And he ran out into the sleet and had no fun. So that was one big lesson for sure was, hey, at least examine the principles and or get a basic understanding of what you could potentially encounter in whatever you're doing. So that was one for sure. You want me to keep going or you want to talk about that one for a minute?
Okay. Well, yeah, I want to talk about that one for a minute. What is the difference between that and worry? Because, you know, so many times people will look at potential outcomes and it doesn't do anything except create anxiety.
Yeah. So I happen to know a little bit about this subject because I used to host a podcast called Defeating Depression. And honestly, the whole reason I did that podcast, I was seeing a therapist at the time, but I wanted to interview authors and doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, neuroscientists, and I wanted to get advice on my own mental health. So I'm like, what better way to do it for free than interview them on my podcast? That term, so a Stoic will look at all the potential outcomes to be prepared and go, this could happen, this could happen, come what may, I'll find a way. Mm-hmm. What happens with anxiety is anxiety turns into what they call catastrophizing. Mm-hmm. And when you start thinking of all of the worst possible outcomes and you know you're catastrophizing because your fight or flight system, your limbic system kicks in. Mm-hmm. So you can, if the fight or flight or freeze response kicks in, oh, wait a second, I've let my imagination go to the dark place. Mm-hmm. I need to pull it back a little bit and instead just go, if this happens, do I have what it takes to overcome it? Yes, I do. And I remember, Eric, when I was first diagnosed with major depression and severe anxiety disorder. And I was I scored in the 95th percentile on both of those. This was 8 years ago, 9 years ago now. And when we started talking about the anxiety disorder, my therapist said something brilliant. That was one of those, man, that will be a until the day I die lesson. And it's one that I share with a lot of people. When he said, hey, you were diagnosed 95th percentile with severe anxiety disorder, he said, I want to tell you, congratulations, you have a tremendous imagination. I was like, huh? And he goes, it was one of those like type of moments. And he goes, you have a tremendous imagination. The problem is your imagination is aimed at all the wrong outcomes.
Yes.
Like, so we need to get you back to the fact that you're not a victim in these moments, in these potentialities, but instead you have what it takes to have a good outcome in all of these potentialities. So it was learning to leverage my imagination. Again, this was 8+ years ago, leverage my imaginations, not to catastrophizing, but to the, what would I do if I encountered that situation? Do I have what it takes? Can I be prepared, et cetera? So, so that would be my answer to that is, you know you're in anxiety and you've allowed the worry walrus As we were talking about before the recording, you know, you've allowed the very worried walrus to get control of you if your emotions kick in and you start catastrophizing beyond reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's an awareness of your body to know the difference, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
You feel that in your body.
And totally. And I mean, when your limbic system kicks in, we've all felt it, right? We've all felt the fight, flight, freeze response. Mm-hmm. So when that kicks in, what you have to do is simply kind of float, let that emotion pass. And you're like, okay, but what would I really do? Am I powerful enough to take care of this or handle that situation should it arrive? We all have, you know, life throws a bunch of stuff at us. So the idea that we can simply go, nope, I've thought my way through potentialities here. I have what it takes. I have what it takes.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, talking about ultramarathons, that ultramarathon runners should do before a race, because,
yep.
And I've mentioned that in some of my I don't know if past podcasts or, you know, but I know I've mentioned it here, I think on the podcast or in my social media, is that, you know, before you go into a race, you know, go through and make the decision, decide beforehand what is going to be a DNF. You know, what was it? What sure. will it take? What will it take for you to call it? Because yep. so many times runners, especially in older, and that's why I talk about the mindset, is that the mindset is what will keep you going. And oftentimes yeah. mindset is what derails people. And I've interviewed people here that have said, you know, I could have finished, you know, once I, you know, at the moment, I felt like I couldn't go on. I couldn't run another step. I was going to kill myself if I kept going forward.
Yeah.
And then 3 hours later, well, I really could have continued because the decision beforehand, here are the things, you know, if it's going to threaten my life, going to cause permanent injury, those are two things you should call the race. You know, don't risk your life or your health by right. continuing, you know, but you know, there are a lot of things that you can overcome, you can work through. And having a crew around helps, you know, to really help you sort those things out to know.
Yeah.
But deciding that beforehand and imagining, yeah. you know, and so there's, you know, a lot of imagination and visualization for success as well that will help get you through those times when it's just your mind telling you, I can't go on.
Right. And we're prone as humans to take the path of least resistance. and it's easy to tap out if we're not mental. You know, David Goggins calls it callous your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you build calluses up from tears and, you know, working something a bunch. So the more you fail and say, like what you just said there, Eric, I could have gone another 3 hours. The more mm-hmm. you say that in your mind and you go, next time I will. And then when you hit that breaking point and you're like, nope, I've been here before. I know this darkness. I'm going to continue to push past it. There's a thing in training called lactic threshold. Have you heard of lactic threshold?
Yes, I've heard of that.
Okay. So for any listeners who don't know what that is, when your body gets to the point where lactic acid builds up in you, in your muscle fibers, and it literally like floods your muscles with acid, in essence. It kind of became famous, that old Tom Cruise movie, A Few Good Men, him and Jack Nicholson, because the Marine had died from lactic acidosis, too much lactic acid in his body. But the intriguing thing that can happen is you can actually train your lactic threshold. So you can push beyond, let's say you can go 2 hours right now on a run, mm-hmm. and your body starts flooding with that acid and you punch through it. Well, if the next time you go 2 hours and 15 minutes, guess what you just did? You lifted your lactic threshold. Now your body will go, no, this is how much is demanded of us. So we won't release that lactic acid into the muscles. And then it might be 3 hours the next time. And so you can actually train your lactic threshold. A lot of people, especially in distance running, I have heard this, Eric, you don't hit that lactic threshold unless you're redlining it, which I imagine doesn't happen for the first marathon portion.
No. And for ultra marathons, I mean, it's a much slower, I mean, you talked about this, that you did a series of sprints. I mean, that's kind of your life, the way you go after life, the way you go after running is a series of sprints. Ultra marathons, you typically, the one thing that will give you a DNF is going out too fast. And so,
almost everything though.
And so, you're ready to go. You're all prepared and trained, but you still have to hold yourself back and hold yourself in reserve. What I say, whether it's life or ultra marathon, the key to success is managing your energy.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
managing your energy and managing your mindset. That's what it is. And so, that's so important in ultra marathons. And so you have to not go out too fast. You have to, take in the proper hydration, and there's a lot of strategies, and that applies to life too. Kind of what you were talking about, looking at those things and looking at the outcomes and going, well, yes, I can deal with whatever comes.
Yeah. So in CrossFit, we do the WOD. I'm going to tell you all some of these definitions because we CrossFitters have their own weird language.
Yeah. Well, WOD everybody does.
Yeah. So it's the WOD, a workout of the day, WOD. But within the WOD, we usually do some kind of warm up, some kind of stretching, then usually some kind of strength training. Hey, we're building to 75% of our max lift on this, or 80% of whatever it might be. So we do some strength training, and then we do what's known as the Metcon, or the metabolic conditioning. And that's usually within a 1 hour class. Usually the Metcon is somewhere between 8 to about 14 minutes, 10 to 12 minutes. Now that doesn't sound like a lot, but you're also redlining for that entire 8 to 12 minutes. And I wear a heart rate monitor for when I'm doing it, so I can monitor my heart rate. But usually in those Metcons, my heart rate will get between 170 and 180 during that Metcon. Mm-hmm. So what I learned very early on, through making the mistakes, like you said, of pushing it a little too hard, getting out the gate too fast, it's like a 5 minute, like sometimes it's a 5 minute slam. And by the end of it, you're broken. You're going, man, that was the worst 5 minutes of my day, but the best 5 minutes of my day. But what'll happen is, I was discovering that if I went out, especially if we were going to do like a 14 minute Metcon, if I went out the gate too fast and was up at 170 in my heart rate within the first 2 or 3 minutes, I was going to be toast. I just knew it every time. But I built to the point, every now and again, we'll do a longer Metcon, a 20 minute or a 24 minute Metcon, or a 16 or 18. What I found out was my lactic threshold, because the first 4 months I was there, that we never did more than 14 minutes of a Metcon. So I learned to push between 170 and 180 up to 14 minutes. One of the first times we did an 18 minute thing, couldn't even lift the bar, and actually got sick, like physically sick the rest of the day. So my body was like, you're toast, dude, you're done. So once I started doing that, I realized, oh wait, no, for these longer ones, I need to stay around 160 in my heart rate. Mm-hmm. So that I can push past that 14 minute mark and then start redlining for that last 4 or 5 minutes of the workout. And I think that's a really key thing for anybody, even in your world of ultra marathons as well, is figure out what your pace is. Mm-hmm. Have your pacers, right? The people who are going with you, along with you for the journey, have the those who accompany you. You've got your plan, but then don't let the adrenaline take you beyond the training. Because if you do, you will flatline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very common. It's very, very common.
Oh yeah. We all get the quote game day jitters.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got to stick to your plan and stick to your training.
If you are a business owner or an entrepreneur, you know all about stress. Business owners and ultramarathon runners both have to have a strong mindset, but the difference is that business owners and entrepreneurs tend to ignore the warning signs of stress and burnout. When you run an ultramarathon, you push your body to the limit, and you have to manage your energy in an ultramarathon to be successful and make it to the finish line. But when you run an ultramarathon, you get to rest and recover when your race is over. If you're a business owner, you tend to feel like you're in a race with no finish line. In ultramarathon, they call those the last man standing, and the strongest survive. If you're a business owner and you're not careful, you could be one of those who ends up blowing up and not finishing, breaking your body. Business owners tend to keep pushing until something breaks. As a mindset coach, I help business owners manage their energy, de-stress their life, and be profitable as well as healthy and successful. If you are in that situation, contact me at ultramindsetpodcast.run. That's ultramindsetpodcast.run for a free 25-minute mindset reset. I can help you keep from burning yourself out, managing your energy for success.
So you talk a little bit more about your series of sprints.
Sure.
Because, you know, a lot of ultramarathoners, I mean, people talk about, you know, breaking down a big race into sections, and, you know, that they just focus on, you know, mentally. If you have a too big of a goal, too big of a target, mentally, it's difficult to comprehend that all at once and to take that on.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, talk a little bit about your strategy for breaking things down.
So I remember learning about interval running as just a good way to burn calories, especially if you're in a training to get your heart rate training up a little bit and, you know, strengthen that muscle. and the idea with interval running, at least one of the patterns I have done and still do regularly, like I'll still go down to a local gym, not necessarily CrossFit, and a couple days a week, I'll go, hey, I'm going to do interval cardio training. And it's like warm up for a couple minutes, then it's increase the speed every minute on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm at a 5 for my warm up. Then I go 6 for a minute, 7 for a minute, 8 for a minute, 9 for a minute, back down to 6, 7, 8, 9. Do that pattern a couple times. And at the end, you go full bore for the last few minutes of I'm at a 10. And what I have found is that's a really good way to train my heart rate and to train my recovery. And that's actually what I love about sprints through life as well is let's look at Olympic runners here real fast, Eric. When you see a marathoner, an Olympic marathoner versus an Olympic, you know, 100-meter runner or 400-meter, their muscle structure is different, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like a marathoner has longer, leaner muscles. Their intake of what they need is different as far as calorically, as far as their macros, carbs, fats, and proteins versus what a sprinter needs. And they tend to be a little bit more jacked, and their muscles tend to be not as long, but a little bit, you know, more taut and tight together. Mm-hmm. And I have found that in my own life, I'm naturally more of a physical sprinter, but also if you ask me something about my makeup in my mind, if you ask me, hey, Dallas, I need you to go do 50 weeks a year, 50 hours a week, just pushing that paper back and forth, doing that same task every day. You know, if I couldn't be in a job or in a career where I was doing the same stuff continually. I'm just more of a project focused person. It could be Eric, that growing up, I did a ton of theater and I never did anything longer. The longest quote theater run I did was 3.5 months of a show. And it was a paid gig. And it was at a dinner theater, and we did Hello Dolly was one of the longer ones that I did. And it was about 3.5 months of a run of a show. But once that was done, it was done. And it was like rehearse, practice, get ready, do the show, 2 or 3 week run or month long run, or in that case, 3 months run. But then it's over. And then you stop and you get ready for the next gig. And I think something in me conditioned to that. It just naturally fit my talents, but it was like, get ready for this project, launch this project, wrap this project, celebrate the win, move to the next project. And so I can push really hard to punch through a project I know has to be delivered this week for a client. I'll put in the extra hours and extra work, but when that one's done, I go, hey, it's done. So I think that idea, and I hope I'm being clear with that, but mm-hmm. I think the idea is, for me, it's like, if you asked me to not do a project and to just do drone work, here's what you do every day, same day. It's like that old movie Office Space. Eventually I'm going to take a bat to that printer. For those of you who know that reference from that movie, that copy machine, they bang up a copy machine at some point. Eventually that's going to be me, because I'm going to be like, this is soul sucking to me. But if I can see small little targets that I can run, sprint, hit it, celebrate that hit, run, sprint, hit it, boom, I nailed that target too. But then those targets are behind me and I'm going on to the next target. For me, that's just a little bit more of a growth focus, and allows me to really dive in 2 feet, 100% into something fully, rather than just kind of like 50 to 60% in my weeks doing the same tasks over and over.
Mm-hmm. So do you have an overarching strategy that you put those, I mean, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah. I mean,
so you, it's not just random sprints. You have
no, very tagged strategic
those together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very strategic. So what I do is, I'll use this story, not my story, but one that we'll all be familiar with. John F. Kennedy in the 60s, at the beginning of the decade in 1960, he said to the whole nation, part of it had to do with the Cold War that was occurring and the communist threat. But he says, by the end of this decade, we're going to put a man on the moon. We're going to choose to do a difficult thing. Because, you know, not because it's easy, but because it's hot. You know, like, he does all that.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. the worst JFK impression ever, by the way.
Well, you got a little bit of that accent in there. Yeah.
You got a little bit of that. By the end of the decade, yeah. We're going to put a man on the moon. It's got that like East Coast vibe that you're like, ah, stop it. So what he did was he inspired the nation with this big dream. But you can't just go from, oh, great. That dream, and all of a sudden it happens, right? What you have to do is you have to work backwards from the target, which is man on the moon, and you work backwards, and you then start saying, well, we're going to need to accomplish some missions to make this happen. To fulfill the dream, we have to have missions that get accomplished. So they began to put in place Apollo 1, Apollo 2. But it was like, what needs to be accomplished in this particular mission to realize the dream at the end of the decade? So, you know, it was like, well, first we got to get into orbit. Then we got to get into deep space. Then we got to do an unmanned landing. Then we got to do a loop around and a re-land. Like, there were all of these, every Apollo mission had its own target. And they knew whether or not they hit it. And from that mission, it was like, okay, that mission is in 6 months. What needs to happen today and this week and this month to accomplish that mission 3 months from now? So mm-hmm. I kind of do a work backwards mentality. And this is actually part of my power playbook training that I do with some of my coaching clients. We look out, where do you want to be 3 years from now, Dallas, in four particular areas? Where do you want to be physically, spiritually, relationally with my spouse and my kids, and then professionally in my business? So I look at spiritual, physical, relational, professional. I've heard other coaches say things like faith, family, fitness, and finances, body being balanced, business. But those four quadrants are pretty pretty easy to go, no, I can hit some targets in that. So I think, what's the dream I want to be at in 3 years, 3 to 5 years out? And then I go, okay, what does that look like in a year from now then? Well, I need to have this in place, have accomplished that, do this and that. And then I break it down even further of, okay, now I'm going to take where I want to be in a year financially, and I'm going to break it down into quarterly missions. Every 90 days, there's a new mission. I have to be educated in this 90 days. Then I'm going to start to invest that in the following 90 days. So I kind of like break it down into, if I want to be here in a year, what do I need to do every quarter physically, spiritually, professionally, relationally in my family? And then from that, I'm like, okay, now I'm going to, here's what needs to be done in the next 90 days. What are 3 natural steps to that to accomplish every month? By month 1, I need to have A, month 2, B, and month 3, C, so that I am in line to strategize my steps to accomplish my mission, to realize my dream. And so I teach people how to strategically do that, but that's the way I do it, is kind of work backwards from, you know, within 3 years, Dallas wants to land on the moon sort of mentality. Not actually, I'll leave that up to Elon Musk and his ilk, but that's the idea, is I want to be in orbit in my own life in those areas. So what are my Apollo missions every 90 days to get me to that point?
Yeah. And that applies to any goal you want to have.
Right.
I mean, people who are marathon runners who want to run an ultra marathon. I mean, it's the same thing. You
yep.
look at the goal, you break it down, go backwards and establish a training plan.
Right. And,
yeah. So I just realized, I mean, since I don't plan these things out, you said you had more lessons about your 10K that you had learned. We kind of got sidetracked. I was like, okay. I said, oh yeah. Well, we just kind of left that one hanging. So what else did you learn?
I can give you a couple of shorter, quick lessons.
Okay.
One of the ones, so obviously not number one was prepare what you can and know what you can know. And then that way you're a little more well-equipped. The second lesson was, I gave up very quickly being in a race with anyone else. And I was just in a race with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, can you push, can you lean into the discomfort enough to finish this on time, to finish this in the allotted time amount? So I think an important lesson for us to consider is, I'm competing with me only, and I'm trying to be better than I used to be. I'm not where I want to be, but I'm not where I was. And in this race, I can definitely pace off of certain people. I do that in CrossFit as well. There's a couple people that I kind of pace off of. I know if I can watch what this guy is doing and I can get to where he is, then I can also be like, all right, I'm close to my regular pace. So I think pace yourself and run your own race is a very important thing. The other one that I had was, once I realized I was ill-equipped, once I realized, I'm about to crap the bed here, sort of thing, then it was, how do I adapt? How can I adapt in the moment and in the situation to best keep my pace with myself? And so adaptability is very important. But what happened was, immediately all of the junk started coming into my brain, all of the self-talk, all of the like, oh, you didn't plan this right. Oh, you're the worst. Oh God. Like the amount of self-attack that was happening and the clutter that was happening, and just all of the negative garbage that came up. It was, how do I overcome and create space? And actually what I did was, I went back to that training day where I felt the wind or the wind in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I started listening to the nature around me during the race and was like, all right, I need to create some mental space again. And that was kind of a big part for me, was how do I, now that all the junk is coming in, where can I go into my memory, find an imagination that allows me to create space from all the negative thoughts and just keep focused on the imagination. And so I started listening as I'm running through this trail. I start listening and going, oh, yeah, I can hear the trees. Okay, focus on the trees. It's the wind in the trees, the wind in the trees. It's not that you're unprepared, although you are. It's not that you're the worst ever. Listen to the wind in the trees. Listen to the wind in the trees. That for me was a big lesson during the race. Because I think so many times, once you get into it, you're like, all right, another Stoic principle. All right, the impediment to action is now the action. The obstacle is the way. And it's like, okay, here we are. So how do I now look at the fact that the obstacle is the way, create space, and don't let all the negative things that are in my own brain overwhelm me? Because I don't need to fight those as well. I'm fighting unknowns. I don't need to fight the knowns.
Right. How did you, because I know a lot of people, I think, get stuck in negative self-talk. And I know that used to be my modus operandi, is that it was such a normal part of who I was I just stayed there. So how do you make that, I guess that realization is, hey, wait a minute, I need to adjust what I'm saying to myself.
So one of the greatest lessons on self-talk I actually learned in the last year and a half. And I was reading a book, and I have it actually, didn't know you were going to ask this question because obviously we planned so well here. but it was right here because I was just talking about it to someone else. There's a book by Daniel Pink called To Sell Is Human. Now, Daniel Pink he's really well known for his books on sales, and he's a well-known sales trainer. And probably his most popular work is a book called Drive. Definitely a worthwhile read. But this one, To Sell Is Human, was a game changer for me because he talks about self-talk, and he introduces this idea that a lot of us focus on what's known as declarative self-talk, which is the I am strong, I am powerful. It's I am statements. And that's what we're taught at, kind of like,
I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone right. People like me.
Exactly. It's the old SNL sketch of Stuart Smalley. Exactly. Yeah. And so we're taught this form of self-talk known as declarative self-talk. But when we do that, what's happening underneath, that's like what we're trying to consciously program. But there's all of this subconscious programming that the moment you say to yourself, I am good enough, your subconscious is like, you've never given us that instruction. You know you don't believe that. And we're actually at war with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as though we're trying with this prefrontal cortex to be like, come on, subconscious, follow what I'm saying verbally. And they're like, nah, we're good. You programmed us a long time ago to believe you're not good enough and you're not smart enough, and doggone it, people don't like you. so the declarative self-talk it helps in a moment, but it doesn't actually reprogram. The thing that Daniel Pink gets into in this book, To Sell Is Human, is this idea that we have to get into interrogative self-talk, where we actually begin to ask ourselves questions. Now, the trick is to ask yourself a yes or an affirmative focus question. Can I actually do this? Yes. Because our brains are problem-solving machines. So if we give it a question, it'll not only go about answering it in the affirmative, but it will actually begin to give us the pattern on how to solve it. Mm-hmm. So that's why, Eric, when you're droning on about something, you can't solve it, and you go, I just need to get away from my computer. I just need to go, you know what? I need to, that's why we say, I just need to sleep on it. Because, and we'll say, can I come up with this answer? And when you fall asleep, your brain is like, yes, you can. And I'm going to give it to you now. And then that's why people wake up sometimes at 3 a.m. They're like, oh my gosh, that's the thing. That's the answer that I've been waiting for. So if we can figure out how to do interrogative self-talk, can I be good enough to do this race? Can I actually push through this wall that I'm about to hit? I always hit it at 20, I always hit it 40 miles in, it might be for you guys. And it's like, I always hit this wall at 40 miles in. oh, this is when the gremlins start talking. You've never made it past 40 miles. This is where you start to DNF. This is your burnout point. And it's like, wait, could I go another hour? Yes. And then your body's like, yeah, we can. We got your supplies. What do you need to make that happen? Okay, hydrate here, do this, do that. Like, you know it. Your brain will start to pull the map in front of you if you say, can I hit X marks the spot? And they'll be like, oh, we got the treasure map now. You're going to go 10 paces this way, then you're going to turn southeast and go 12 paces that way. It's like your brain starts to build the treasure map in your mind once you define what X is and ask yourself, can I find X marks the spot? And your brain's like, oh, I gotcha. So the idea with self-talk is interrogative is much stronger than declarative self-talk.
That's great. I love that. And I remember self-help junkie for years. And one of the first, exposures I had to this was Tony Robbins. I found Tony Robbins about 15, 20 years ago. And I was listening to an audio presentation, and he went and talked about the power of questions.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like this whole like 1 hour of that. The way to change your life is to ask yourself powerful questions.
Yep.
And that has stuck with me. In fact, I think I even borrowed it to put that as a chapter in my book.
Yeah. I can't remember. That might be from his Awaken the Giant Within book. If I remember correctly, but absolutely. We think we have to have powerful answers. We have to ask powerful questions.
You have to ask powerful questions. Yeah. And he said, one of the most powerful questions. Well, he said the unhelpful questions start with why, because why will put you into a negative spiral. But he said,
why is this happening to me? Why would this go wrong? Yeah. Why? Yeah, totally.
Yeah. He said, ask questions that start with how can I do this? How can I, and refine your how questions, and your brain will actually put you on a path to discover, I firmly believe that that's what brought me to where I am. I mean, I probably could have come faster with a coach. I did it on my own, but I was asking myself those how questions. How can I get to the fact, make my subconscious believe the things that I want to believe.
100%. 100%. And so you say, am I capable? Yes. How can I get there? And it's like, well, I can help with that, And I think that's a really important thing that I learned on that run was how do I now deal with what I'm dealing with and still make it to that finish line before the time cap? Well, I got to increase my pace here. I got to pay attention to this, et cetera. So that was a big lesson, creating space from the negative voices, listening to the wind in the trees to kind of cheer me on, and finding the wins where I could find the wins. And then I think the other thing too that was really important for me in that particular race was this idea that I can, what's a great way to say this? I failed forward. So even though
I've heard the term, so how to explain how that happened for you?
The race did not go like I wanted. I definitely didn't want to be coming in second to last with 30 seconds left on the time cap. None of that was ideal. Everything about it on the notes was a failure, except I accomplished my 90-day target. Mission accomplished. Hit the target. And so when I got in the car, I had a weird, afterward, I had a weird mix of emotions of everything about that sucked. But then I went, but I did it, and now I know what to do next. And so I also celebrated the fact, I think so many of us start well, but don't finish in life. And I was able to, and even when we don't finish well, it's just the habit of finishing, because so many of us start on a thing and pull the chute way too early. We start on a project, we start on a dream, we start on a goal, and we just drop out way too early. Once the going gets tough, it's again that path of least resistance. And so I realized, was that ideal? No. Was it the thing that I was like, man, I feel really good about what I just did? No. None of that felt good. None of it felt right. And so I could have easily stolen victory. I could have easily stolen defeat out of the jaws of victory, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, reversing that phrase, a lot of us are like, oh, he stole victory out of the jaws of defeat. No, I could have easily stolen defeat out of victory been like, man, I could have focused on all the things that went wrong. But the truth is, I trained for this quarter, and it was the first kind of those kind of races that I did, and I accomplished it. And I sat in the car for a minute and I went, you know what? Well done. At least you finished. And mm-hmm. So I think that to me was the biggest takeaway, was like, hey, you finished it. Well done. And then I was proud of myself.
And it's important to celebrate. I mean, it's important to celebrate victory. I mean, even if it didn't turn out the way you wanted, I mean, instead of downplaying your success, of saying, yeah, I did that. It was worth celebrating.
And yeah.
And I think I fall down on that oftentimes. If I forget to celebrate the wins.
Right.
And if you don't celebrate the wins, your mind is like, well, okay, that's not important. We're not going to really work that hard again.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to give you a little bit of time to talk about what you're doing as I know you're a coach and you've got some new things starting. And so I wanted to give you some time to talk a little bit about what you've got going on. Cause you're going to be, you're talking to people, helping with communication, and you're also going to be helping people who want to be on podcasts. And so I'd like to,
yeah.
Talk a little bit about what you've got.
Sure thing. Thank you. Appreciate that. So my company is called Communicate to Succeed. The number two, Communicate to Succeed. And I do a lot of training specifically around presentations, public speaking. I run a mastermind small group training for introverted entrepreneurs to help them get really, a lot of them feel like when they do a public speaking gig, they know they have to do it. It's a necessary evil. They don't get energy from the crowd. So it's like, well, I have to do this. How can I do it really well? So they buy into this myth that they have to act like an extrovert or adopt all of this energy, fake confidence, you know, all of those elements of being on stage. But what I do with inside of the training program, and many people don't believe that I'm an introvert, but I am. What I do with inside of the training program is we get templates and I help you work your way through your ideal audience, how to hit them with right brain and left brain metaphors versus information. A lot of speakers make way too big of a mistake of leaning into too much data, too much information. And the whole idea with what I teach is called transformation communication. It's taking the audience on a journey of transformation so that they realize, oh, you've got something powerful that you can help me be in a different place. And so that 8-week program is, I call it the C to S, Communicate to Succeed, the C to S keynote. And it's a great thing because you walk away at the end of it with a 5-minute, a 15-minute, and a 50-minute keynote, as well as a podcast interview and how you do that. But then with the podcast training, for people who have to just go on podcast, have conversations like this, I actually do a training. It's a free checklist if anybody wants to download it. And it's called the Podcast Pro Checklist. And it's really to help you look and sound, especially if you do video versions as well, look and sound like a star guest that every host dreams of interviewing. And it gives you a checklist before, during, and even after the podcast episode goes live. And that is available at podcastprochecklist.com. And it's just a free download, podcastprochecklist.com. But if you're interested in the 8-week keynote group, that is c2skeynote.com. Communicate to Succeed, but it's just c2skeynote.com. And I love doing it. I love talking. My wife jokes, Eric, he's never been a microphone he didn't love. And even though I'm an introvert, I love seeing, there's something that happens when you, and you and I felt it a couple of times on this time together today. There's something that happens when you find that magic happen on stage or in a podcast, and you just feel the exchange of, oh, the audience and the speaker, they're having a moment right now that will never be recreated and can't be recaptured. That magic's happening now. I love to help people figure out how to make that magic happen on stage.
Yeah. And you do public speaking as well.
Yeah, I'm a speaker. I'm a host, event host. I do stand-up comedy every now and again.
Yeah. Yeah, stand-up comedy is, that's a very specific, I mean, that's like walking a tight, I mean, you never know what you're going to get. I mean, you've got to get that kind of feedback from the audience. And
one of the things I love about any kind of public speaking, stand-up comedy being probably the most, is the immediate feedback. You know if it's clicking or not. And if it's not clicking, there are ways to make it click. You're like, I got to get this baby in gear fast. And there are ways to do it just technically. With stand-up comedy, you know immediately, did that joke work or does it need to be tweaked? And so, yeah, for sure. I love getting on stage and going, all right, let's make magic happen, for whether it's a paying audience or at a keynote group or in a sales presentation. It's like, we're going to have a magic moment together. And that's what I actually go into every conversation. It's like I'm listening for the moments that are going to change people and transform them. And then I dial into those moments.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you a lot for taking time to be here. I appreciate it. I'll put your contact information. Now, if people wanted to reach out to you besides those social media, do you have social media links that you could share?
Yeah, I'm on all the socials. I'm hardly ever on Twitter, but on all of them, I'm at Dallas Amsden. DallasAmsden. And that's Twitter, at Instagram, Facebook, the Book of Faces. And then also even on LinkedIn, I'm starting to do more and more on LinkedIn. So you can find me at Dallas Amsden. I'd love to connect with you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks again. And, hopefully, And, after another, maybe we shouldn't wait for 100 episodes before we do this again.
Well, and you're coming on my Speak to Lead podcast here shortly. So, everybody, he'll share with you all as well when he shows up on my Speak to Lead podcast.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks again. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you being here also to listen. If you are a regular listener, you may have noticed I forgot to ask the bridge questions. Bridge questions are something that I've done. It's been a while. I've been adding them, trying to add them to each show. Three random questions that I asked to my guests. It's just kind of for fun. And some of them have led to some interesting additions to the podcast. Don't know if you like them or not, but it is something that I enjoy doing. So I hope that you're enjoying those. And I will try to remember. I put that down to being out of my element, recording in a remote location or a location that was outside my studio, not in the studio where I normally am. So I just kind of forgot those. I will try to remember those and I want to make them a regular part of the show. You can find the show notes for this episode and all of the others at ultramindsetpodcast.run. There are links there to Dallas and his links. Also, there's a podcast player for those of you, if you want to share the podcast and people are not normally listening to podcasts, they can play through the link at ultramindsetpodcast.run. And if you do enjoy this episode and know somebody who might like it, take a minute, send them a link so that they can listen. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset, whether you are in life, in business, or running an ultramarathon. And a strong mindset's a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening. I will see you next time.